Okay, our agenda is here. Marcus, Nicholas, Greg, can you scribe today? Thank you. On the agenda today, we have hopefully Dan Brickley from Google joining us to discuss the JSON-LD integration into Gmail. We'll do that later in the call. We have RDF issue 129, lossless conversion, and RDF issue 130, properly referencing the DOM futures spec. Both of these are Sandra raised both of these concerns, and Sandra's on the call today. So let's go ahead and kind of talk about some updates that we've had, at least from Marcus, on both issues. Sandra, do you have a preference on which one we deal with first?
I don't. Let's do DOM futures first.
Sure.
Yeah.
Okay.
No particular reason. It just seems like a good idea.
I'm hoping it's going to be the easier of the two, but we'll see. Okay, so the question here is, how do we properly reference the DOM futures specification in a way that provides the most amount of stability to the JSON-LD API specification? So it's not illegal from a W3C process standpoint to reference an external document that is being actively developed on, but I believe Sandro's point was that we should try and ensure that the way that we reference and the features that we reference are as stable as possible, or they are stable. So there's concern that the DOM futures spec will change over the next 1 to 2 years, and we have to somehow, at least I think this is your position, Sandra, is we have to make it clear that the features that we are using in the DOM futures specification are not, or there are no plans to change those features. Is that an adequate summary, Sandra?
I think there's a couple dimensions here. The heart of it is we need to have our spec be clear about what it means if futures changes. You know, hopefully it won't, in which case it doesn't matter what we say here. But if it does change, we need to basically say, are we going with the version as it changes, in which case all your code has to change too? And basically, you know, if some unknown, unnamed group of people can make you have to rewrite your JSON-LD implementation, are we saying that? Or are we saying that it will be frozen based on what happens, you know, what we understand it to be right now, and it doesn't really matter what DOM or futures or W3C or anyone else does later, JSON-LD is still JSON. The JSON-LD API is still the same. But I think I'm glossing over a detail there about how the way futures are already kind of indirected.
So I think what we are going to, or at least this was my assumption going into it, is that we are telling implementers the first thing, which is if it changes, you should do your best to track what the web platform is doing. Right. So at that point, you know, we don't want to necessarily fork this thing unnecessarily. Nobody, the developers of the editors and authors of the DOM future specification and the editors of the JSON-LD specifications don't want to see a fork. And so if DOM futures changes in the future, I think we're going to try and track it as best we can. Now, there's always the out of left field DOM futures changes so drastically that it's a huge rewrite for implementers, and at that point we might have another discussion about, you know, whether JSON-LD API is supposed to change or not. But I think as things stand right now, we don't think that there's going to be a large change for DOM futures. Like you, and by large change, I mean large architectural change. For example, they might take the den function and rename it to something else, but I don't classify that as a large architectural change. It's a fairly, that would be just renaming a function. Same thing if with parameters passed to the function, that's not really a large architectural change. So I think in the predicted case, nobody is seeing any large architectural change coming down the pipeline. But if there is such a change, I think this group, and I think we should say this in the specification, that the group that is in charge of JSON-LD at the time will do their best to align the JSON-LD API with that new direction. But we don't foresee that happening.
So what you're talking about is not a W3C recommendation. I mean, the way you're talking about JSON-LD behaving is not the way W3C recommendations have ever behaved in the past. So that's a pretty big uphill battle.
Except for the HTML, the entire set of HTML specs, and actually some of the web APIs. They end up tracking what the browser vendors do eventually. Right.
But the particular spec, HTML 4.01, you don't become compliant or non-compliant. An implementation doesn't change its conformance because of something somebody else does in the future.
Mm-hmm.
Once you write a piece of code that conforms to a spec, that piece of code always conforms to that spec, no matter what happens to the planet after that. And that's
right.
Sort of the way people are used to recommendations behaving. So it's a pretty odd thing to say whether or not you're conforming to JSON-LD 1.0 as published in 2013 might change.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this implementation you made that was perfectly conformant, in 2014 suddenly your code is now broken.
Right.
So there are two
discussions happening here. One of them is what implementers are going to do in the future. And the second one, which is I think what you're raising, is what constitutes a conforming JSON-LD implementation. And I don't think we're talking about changing what a conforming JSON-LD implementation means. So if you launch with, if you're conforming with the JSON-LD 1.0 specification and there's a test suite for the JSON-LD 1.0 specification, then I think implementers can count on always being conformant with that if they're conformant with the test suite, and the test suite is going to be frozen, right? So if they're conformant with the specification and they're conformant with the test suite, they can call their JSON-LD processor a conforming JSON-LD 1.0 implementation.
Well,
so I don't think
test suite does not test futures. It really doesn't test the API unless there are plans to extend it to do so.
We have the harness that does that, right?
It would have to test futures, and it would have to test whether then is spelled then, and if then is spelled differently, then
that's not in
every implementation. Then every implementation breaks.
Right, but that's not in the spec at all. We left that out of the spec on purpose.
You can't leave it out of the spec. I mean, you can't call it a test suite and not have it use a future. How could you possibly do that?
Maybe
I'm missing something here.
Yeah, you don't. The thing that is in the API is the future object. What's exposed on that object is not a part of the API. It's just not. That's what Marcus was trying to make clear on the mailing list, is that dot then is not mentioned in the spec at all for this very reason. If it changes, then implementers have the option of updating it to the new thing or keeping it backwards compatible with the old thing and updating it to the new thing. So if, for example, it changes from then to then too, it's up to the implementers to provide a then interface as well as a then too interface that's completely backwards compatible. So it's a separation of concerns that allows us that amount of flexibility in the future without breaking the conforming JSON-LD 1.0 implementations.
I'm going to step aside on this one and basically say, I don't think that's wise, but I don't personally care. What you're going to have to do here is convince the director.
Uh-huh.
And for Jason LD, I don't know if the director is going to be Ralph or Philippe.
Uh-huh.
But, yeah. I don't know if they'll be convinced by this argument or not.
Okay, so there's another way to look at this. Well, I mean, I think it's important to convince you because because if we can't convince you, then we may not have a very convincing argument for Ralph and Philippe. So there's another way to look at this.
I agree it would be good if you could convince me, but it may just be that I'm sort of being dense here and I don't want to stand in the way. It may be that Philippe would go, oh, yeah, of course, that's absolutely right, and go ahead. So I don't want you to spend a whole lot of effort trying to convince me here.
Okay, so there's another way to look at this, which is what is the worst thing that could happen if then changes to then too, right?
Yeah.
And in that case, I think we have a very clear approach to the problem. If then changes to then too, implementers can continue to provide a backwards compatible interface using, you know, whatever features mechanism they're using in their implementation, and they can provide the new interface. And the JSON-LD API spec, the JSON-LD API spec doesn't have to change at all. Not a single word in that specification needs to change if that happens. You know, there are also
In practice, you'd end up with the implementations having to provide both the old version of futures and the new version of futures.
Yeah, but it's not.
Hopefully they could do, and hopefully it would be trivial to do. If it is just renaming, but right, if it turned out there was a different semantics about like when you're allowed to call them.
Yeah.
And that, you know, for efficiency you want to do it one way, and for backward compatibility you want to do the other way. That could turn out to be really quite hairy.
Yeah, and that I think, you know, we classify those as unknown unknowns, right? We don't know if that's ever going to, or known unknowns. We don't know if that's ever going to happen, and we highly doubt that they're going to make that severe of a change to the promises architecture, futures architecture.
One other related thing here is that it doesn't matter what we think there. What matters is what that working group thinks.
Mm-hmm.
Do we have a statement on the record where they have agreed that they're not going to change that, or stated how flexible, how much they might change it?
So the statement is we do have a statement from them, but it's the standard what WG line. It is this API is implementable now. It will be frozen once there are enough implementations in the wild, and we won't change it after that. So it could be argued that...
But they're saying it's not frozen yet.
They're saying it is ready for implement. They never say frozen. You're never going to get them to say that unless it's at the W3C. The W3C says frozen. The what WG says, living standard. It changes constantly up until the point that we have an implementation in a browser and it's widely deployed, and at that point it doesn't matter if we want to change it or not, it doesn't change.
Yeah. Okay. We really need to move this to a director's meeting and get an answer from the director, because I think you and I could sort of second guess what would fly here and what wouldn't fly.
Mm-hmm.
So for a long time, and we still might well be wrong.
Okay. Well, I think we have a number of arguments, and I think that the very worst case is not that terrible. Like, in the very worst case that they change the API, I think that implementers would be able to figure out a way of fixing it.
Normally, the W3C doesn't ever put implementers in that position.
Right.
So it would be. But the whole HTML5 WG situation is also a kind of changing landscape there, so W3C may have to adapt to that, and there's certainly people working on trying to figure out how to do that, so we're sort of part of that
Yep.
situation.
Okay, so do you think that is this enough to address your issue to the point that we can just take it to the director?
Unfortunately, the way it normally works is you talk about this with the director when you're transitioning to CR.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I guess that's where we are right now. We're only at last call. So we're not going to do anything until we go to CR anyway. So I guess we could just let this wait until that transition meeting.
I guess the question I'm asking is, is there anything more that we can discuss with you on this issue, or should we just put out the line of argumentation and send it to the director and ask them if it's sound? Is that the next step?
I don't think I'm being very helpful on this, aside from sort of pointing out that, you know, I think I've now pointed out sort of how complicated this landscape is, and that it's we're going to need to have a serious. It will probably be more than a 1 hour meeting with the director to solve this. Unless Philippe has a great answer up his sleeve, but I'm betting he doesn't.
Okay. All right. Welcome to the call, Dan. Dan Brickley is here from Google. And I think we can just transition right into talking about Gmail and JSON-LD and Google Now and Google Search. So, Dan, what might help is just a little bit of background about where JSON-LD is in the adoption, you know, curve on inside Google, what you would like this working group or this group to look at, and any issues you feel that we really should address in the coming weeks.
Let's start with some disclaimers. Disclaimer number one is I've been sick for days and I'm not swapped in on the details, so I'm sorry if I'm a bit vague. The second disclaimer is I'm on a crappy Skype connection, so maybe you can't hear me. How are we doing so far?
Good. We can hear
awesome.
You.
And the third disclaimer would be that I haven't done the paperwork to be officially representing Google at W3C yet, although in practice that shouldn't be a problem. So let me tell you how we ended up with JSON in email instead of microdata or RDFA. So this was a very, very product-driven thing, and a lot of Google is very driven by product. They wanted ways of putting structured data in these messages. They were trying microdata, and product teams and partners were coming back saying, what are these funny words here that have nothing to do with, I don't know, flight reservations? So words like item prop, item type, we would have had the same thing with RDFA. You know, what's type of doing here? So one of the engineers tried out a simpler, flatter JSON design, not even in particular thinking of JSON-LD, I think, and it just turned out to be very, very close to JSON-LD, so close that it would have been embarrassing not to acknowledge that it's basically the same idea. So that's how we came at it. It wasn't let's use standards, it's let's solve a problem. And coming at it from that angle, some of JSON-LD looked really heavy. So the actual payload was beautiful, it's just JSON. And then the header with all the context information was kind of scaring the product guys who have to deal with partners. So we tried to just simplify it and flatten it down as much as possible. And if I understand right, the main sticking point now is whether we put http://// prior to schema.org.
Mm-hmm.
So does that give a bit more context?
I think that was the major concern was, well, there are two major concerns. One of them is not having http://// in front of schema.org, because if you don't do that, then we have to figure out some way of modifying JSON-LD to accept that kind of input. The other concern is that Google isn't publishing a schema.org JSON-LD context file. And we might actually have an answer for that. We have a Google Summer of Code intern starting up in a week or two, where one of the things that he's supposed to be working on is generating that JSON-LD context. But so I think those are the major two issues, and really they're not that major. We could address them. We just need to understand what Google's position is on these things and how we can best address them. So I think that's what we need to focus on when in the discussion is, you know, is Google okay with putting http://in front of scheme.org? And if so, that's great. That takes care of that issue. And then the second issue is, are you going to publish a JSON-LD context? And if so, we already have someone lined up that can build that JSON-LD context for you guys. So any comments on those two major things?
Sure. So Google isn't the only relevant party here. I work for Google. I could probably go ahead and stick up a context file. But we have to also bear in mind the partners at Schema.org, so Yahoo, Yandex, and Bing. Microsoft in general, actually, is a larger than Bing team there. I know some of my colleagues from those other companies are also interested in seeing Schema.org deployed in JSON syntaxes. Microsoft have the, what's it called, OData project with its own JSON notation. But they have been looking recently at JSON-LD. I think you can see a discussion paper coming out soon that explores some JSON-LD ideas. So they were concerned that by Google shipping this product, they shouldn't shut down their conversation about possible future directions that maybe JSON-LD can take later. If the context file is completely generic and neutral and doesn't need to do anything specific to the vocabularies in the file, I think it should be relatively straightforward to publish one. It won't be able to happen immediately. The reason for that is that the site currently is on a sort of weird static hosting system where I can't do content negotiation. So I've got it on my to-do list to get it off of there onto, what do you call it, AppSpot, App Engine. Once it's up there, certainly content negotiation should be trivial. I think we even have a draft of a context file, but certainly something that's come from you guys or been checked by you guys would be great.
It'd be nice to have something that's automatically generated from the vocabulary.
What does it need to say exactly?
Well, the main thing is, in my opinion, is I guess there's two things. One is properties whose ranges are objects rather than literals. You would want to mark as having a type of at ID. The other thing is, at least in the microdata, the microdata RDF transformation, we provide for the multiple values of certain properties being in a list rather than just being specified as different values. For example, music tracks. It makes sense when you're listing tracks that they be ordered. I think breadcrumbs are another example of where we apply ordering. We made some perhaps arbitrary decisions when we did the microdata to RDF sort of vocabulary mapping. And I think those are similar things that could be done in a more automated process, perhaps. I don't know if you maintain any information like that in the schema. It would be useful if you did. Other examples would be things that take a date range, say.
Date range.
It's more complicated because I think you're probably more flexible in terms of allowing various forms of date and time and date time as values, whereas typically an RDF schema would allow one of them, right?
Pretty monstrously flexible. I mean, there's a level at which Schema.org says, as a project, we expect to see bad data, so in any property we expect to see literal values. Whether that's saying literal values are legal or not, that's a coin to us. But we do say, you know, wherever you have a thing, we expect sometimes you just put the thing's name instead, and we'll find a way to deal. to my instinct would be to keep this file as minimal as possible. I don't believe Google currently has plans to sort of dynamically fetch and parse using it. So it's really just boilerplate as far as the current Google parse is concerned. I think in terms of dealing with JSON-LD payload, the engineering team have done a good job as far as I know. But there wasn't an interest in sort of dynamically modifying the parser's behavior based on fetching things from the web live.
Yeah, and you wouldn't need to. So I want to make it very clear that just because Google publishes a JSON-LD context does not mean that they need to then go out and fetch that context and read it dynamically from the web and all that kind of stuff. For example, the web payments and the paceform work caches the context. The cache is the paceform context, and it does a pretty static, interpretation of documents that it gets in. You do want to make sure that there's no conflict in the way that JSON-LD processor interprets the data and the schema.org parsers process the data, but I think that would be fairly easy to accomplish, or at least it's fairly easy to see when there's an issue with that. Additionally, I think we should try and be minimal in the first version that we put out for this thing. I don't think that we should try and hammer every last bit of it down. So, for example, Dan, if one of the simple things that we could do is the JSON-LD context could just assume strings for everything in the first version, and then we could start narrowing it down later on by saying some of these things should be URLs, some of these things, should be dates. So I think there's a multi-stage approach to publishing a proper JSON-LD context for schema.org, and we should start simple.
Is it okay for the context to be agnostic? Does the context have to say string or thing for everything?
Say that again.
Can the context be agnostic about the values for a given property?
Yeah, it can be.
Does it have to? Okay, I think that will be our first cut.
Okay, and so strings for everything.
Well, of course, the other thing is that you might say in your guidelines that if you really want this to be defined to be a URI, for instance, you can use the expanded form that basically the adding things to the context is sort of setting the default behavior if it's just a key, string value that you want to interpret. But you can always use an expanded value form to be unambiguous.
Right. And the downside to that is that your partners or implementers might find it a little more confusing, but maybe they would. We'd need feedback from people implementing this stuff in the wild to see if they're if they understand expanded form or not. And if they don't, there's always the fallback to just a string for everything. I think ideally, Dan, ideally the group would like to see schema.org at least saying that certain things should be URLs and certain things should be dates, but it's not a hard and fast requirement, if that makes sense.
So schema.org has something minimal is more likely to be agreed by these four companies,
mm-hmm.
Or agreed more quickly.
Mm-hmm.
So for right now, with RDFA, is everything a string, or is there a URL distinction made there?
RDFA definitely has a URL distinction there.
I know RDFA itself does, but in the schema.org usage of RDFA, if a webmaster publishes it and gets confused about whether they're supposed to be marked as a string or a item identifier, Do the schema.org partners autocorrect that, or because it's exactly the same situation as we've got here with JSON-LD.
I think it's fairly conventional RDFA if you use RDFA with schema.org. We have a file that's not linked sort of namespace style, but you can find it in the IRC chat here. And we just use RDF schema with some extensions to describe the schema in vocabulary. So, you know, there's a type, we say it's an RDFS class, local business, it has an RDFS label, RDFS comment, it's a subclass of a couple of other types. And then the only weird thing we've done is we've used our own properties for domain and range because they're softer.
Yeah, so I think the fundamentally... Go ahead.
Up to you.
I think fundamentally, Sandro, the answer to the question is that there is a data model behind schema.org that is very well typed. So that's the second link that Dan put out there. But I think, as Dan said before, they get a lot of garbage data, and so they try and interpret values. They try to interpret values in the correct way. So, for example, if somebody does, my understanding is, if somebody does property URL and then content and then put a URL in there, RDFA would think that's a string, but schema.org would understand that that is meant to be a URL. Is that a correct interpretation, Dan?
I think it's more the converse. So let me think. So you have a film, a movie object. You describe that reasonably. And then you say it has an active relationship to another object. But you just put the string Johnny Depp instead of saying that the value of actor is a person and the person has a name Johnny Depp. Mm-hmm. There's a kind of consensus from the first four search engines that if they see that construction, that it's just a string as a value, then it's they're going to figure out that it's a label, probably the name of an object, that is the value of that property. It's very likely trade-off stuff, and Core has been dancing around for a long time. You need a way of accepting people writing DC Creator Dan Brickley instead of DC Creator saying thing type person is named Dan Brickley.
Right. So you're saying that they try and figure it out as much as to the they try hard to try and figure it out.
Yeah. Or at least we say we're going to try hard. I don't know how hard we're actually trying right now.
Right. Okay.
I guess it would be useful if there's a rule-based system that can do those types of things, and that rule system can be defined. I mean, certainly it doesn't simply extend the RDF schema. Or OWL, for that matter, but yet there are rules. So I think for the greater good, at some point it would be useful because those rules are generally useful if that could be written down someplace.
So that one I think you could capture relatively tidily. The other one I hate to raise it is the HTTP range 14 thing. So generally, as a vocabulary, schema.org doesn't care how pedantic you are in distinguishing the movie Pirates of the Caribbean from the web page Pirates of the Caribbean on IMDb. In practice, what we see is people deploying, and some of our examples encourage this, in a way that conflates the topic of a page with the page itself. In some ways, just using markup encourages this as well. So the link between the Johnny Depp page and the Pirates of the Caribbean page on IMDb is a simple rel equals dot 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 hyperlink. If it was going to carefully draw the distinction between the thing itself and the page that describes it, there'd be a bunch more markup there, and probably IMDb would have messed it up. No disrespect to IMDb. Right. So schema.org, by being mixed in with kind of mainstream markup, tends to be messier on these distinctions than nice clean link data would be. But we don't want that scruffiness to infect our use of JSON-LD.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so going back to the two primary issues, how do you think that the context, putting at context schema.org versus putting at context http://schema.org is going to be that difficult of a sell for the companies involved in schema.org?
My guess is it should be okay. I'm going to Right now, you have to remember that the schema.org partners, apart from Google, haven't seen what Google announced last week, Google I.O. We have had some preliminary discussions around the vocabularies. We've got those vocabularies out into the public at W3C. And we had talked enthusiastically about JSON and JSON-LD. But you know, Google doesn't share its product plans with its competitors. So it's been on the table for a week, basically.
Okay.
I'm going to see some of those guys at Symtec next week, and maybe some of you guys will be at Symtec. So
I'll be there.
I think
something like that. So that sounds like you. Go ahead, Sandra. That sounds like you kind of expect the partners to push back and insist on the HTTP colon, sort of as a slap to Google, which you could go, oh, yeah, you're absolutely right to do the HTTP colon.
Well, Google actually does accept the HTTP colon //, so a lot of this is just an argument about what appears on the documentation page. And it's me dealing with the product team. I want it to be as super simple as possible. What we can do now is look at some of what's coming in from the partners and see, you know, how well they're sticking to what they've been asked to supply. I'm going to try and take a good look at what's actually happening before making a judgment call on this.
So it
was news to me that there's a relative link interpretation of something missing the scheme. And if that's going to force you to do another last call to change, then I think that's a strong argument that we should suck up and deal and put the HTTP colon // in.
Yeah, so that's, I think that's what we're trying to figure out right now, Dan, is that we're in last call, and based on which direction schema.org goes with this. So if you decide not to put HTTP colon // in front of there, it's going to force us into another last call, plus the design work that needs to go into making sure that whatever solution we create is sane. So it would be nice to know which direction we need to go fairly soon, because we come out of last call, I think, in 2 weeks or 1 week. If the decision is put HTTP colon // in front of it, that's great. And I think that's the best for the web. That's the best for, our timeline for the spec. And I just think that would be the best overall solution. And it sounds like you're going to talk to them to see if the various parties involved are okay with doing that. So I think the current approach with that. Say again?
In terms of the Google teams, the last round of discussion on this, everybody seemed pretty skeptical about the need for HTTP colon //. I don't think in that round of discussion it was pointed out that there were relative links. If you could give me a bit more evidence of how the relative links are used and useful, that might help firm up my argument there.
Okay, so then we're going to have an action to give you the argumentation for why it would be a good idea to put HTTP colon // in front there.
Well, as a simple example, it's expected that many people will publish their documents and their contacts sort of relative to each other, have the same either the same directory hierarchy or the same server, in which case relative context makes sense. Also, you might have the case where you've got contexts that are composite, that reference each other. And for deployment purposes, it's useful that they not all have absolute references to each other, but relative references. So I think that's where what was behind the use of relative addressing for contexts.
Also, it's not just relative, but if you want something other than a host name, right? I mean, you want somebody to be able to have several on one host. So that means you've got to have a slash there, so that means it's a URL, not a domain name. I'm just saying you only put a domain name there seems kind of lame.
There's an additional issue, which is whether or not people want to use a secure context, so they might want to use HTTPS.
Yeah, that's a real... slippery one.
Why is it slippery?
All the time it's just the main name. Or if we have to pick whether it's HTTP or HTTPS,
use HTTPS.
We were running.
Yeah,
if you're going to use something, use HTTPS.
Will that affect the URIs that come out of the triple generator?
Yeah, good question. Not necessarily, no, because that's the reference, that's the context itself, and things are not relative to the context. So within the context, you can define your prefixes and vocabularies to be relative to HTTP.
Okay. Is anybody, as far as you know, publishing contexts that use relative URLs? I can hear you typing in the background, Chris, creating one.
I don't think many people are using relative URLs for their context currently. At least I haven't seen use of relative URLs for contexts. Most everyone that we've seen do markup have just put the HTTP://on the front of it, and it really hasn't been. Nobody has really raised it as an issue, right? So, you know, if people are publishing this data, in putting HTTP://, in front of the URLs is such a difficult thing for them, then I think you're going to have a lot of problems in the body of the data where they list links to their website and their, you know, pictures and images and all kinds of other things. Developers, at least the ones that are going to be doing JSON-LD markup for Gmail and Google Search and now, they're used to putting HTTP://, in front of things. So it didn't seem to us like it's that big of a stretch to ask them to put HTTP://, in front of schema.org in the context. So the argument that it's difficult for developers to do that doesn't seem like it has a very good basis, because they do, because you're going to require them to do that for every other link that they put into this data. So that's what's kind of confusing about this decision, is it seems counter to all of the other data that you're asking them to publish.
So I think a lot of people won't read that field as a link. It won't make sense, particularly as a link to them. It's a little short piece of boilerplate, like the old DTD declarations.
Right. So if it's a short piece of boilerplate, they're just going to copy it from the examples and be done with it, right?
I hope so.
So I think that's at least this. I believe all of the discussions we've had in this group have been that is that, you know, if there is some boilerplate that they're going to use, they're just going to copy and paste it from an example. And if it says https://schema.org, they're just going to copy it and put it in there. Right? And there might be, you know, 10 or 15% of the people that don't do that, but in those cases, Google can fix the URL because, you know,
you still there? That's gone quiet. Yeah.
Yeah, we're still here. Can you still hear?
I can hear both of you just fine.
Dan, can you hear us?
Guess not.
Okay, hopefully you can dial back in. So I guess it would be helpful to be able to talk to the people inside of Google that are making those arguments, because it doesn't seem like there's a very strong logical basis to them.
I think it's mostly that it's you know, it's several characters that can just be left out, and they seem arbitrary looking at it from a particular point of view.
That point of view being you're inside a monolithic organization that does exactly one thing. So,
well, of course, it is schema.org and not google.org, which is in the context. So it's not exactly that narrow.
Well, no, because there could be other contexts. I thought if you go http://// domain name, then you get redirected to the slash and you're back in the web land. It is actually a bit of a corner case in the web specs if you use http://// domain name. What it means, does it mean the server or?
You could, yeah. I mean, you could get redirected. That's true. But I think it's up to the organization that's providing the JSON-LD context to make sure that the right thing happens. Right. So I think the right thing to do in this case would be, at least this is I think this is the opinion of the group. The right thing to do in this case would be to do https://scheme.org, right, and then slash. And if you don't do that, if you leave off the trailing slash, then you know you will be redirected to get the proper context. Most JSON-LD processors handle this already. If you do HTTP instead of HTTPS, then you'll be redirected to the HTTPS site, and hopefully you've turned on the HTTPS only setting in on Scheme.org to make sure that the next, fetch for the Scheme.org JSON-LD context is done over HTTPS, or it always does that. So there are a number of ways of addressing all of these issues. I think the core of the issue is that JSON-LD expects a URL for that context, because without that URL, without the context document, a JSON-LD processor doesn't know how to interpret that data. There is no standard interpretation for that data. And that is a pretty important thing. So in order for us to get that, either scheme.org puts https://in front of that domain name, or we have to build something into the spec so that when we see schema.org, it's something very special and we redirect people to the proper context document, wherever that might be.
Well, there's one other option, which is to just not have the context, because in that case, it's the application context, and the application context for Gmail email could be https://schema.org/, right? That defined at the Gmail application level. That way, you'd at least be conformant to the current specs.
That's true, but then at that point, the data is no longer interoperable. It's somebody else that gets one of those emails into their inbox. So, for example, let's say someone's still using Thunderbird, and they have a plugin that can read the scheme.org data from the HTML. They're going to have to do something very special. There's an assumption that program is going to have to make, versus just having the URL in there. And if we just had the URL in there, all email clients around the world would be able to interpret the data in the same exact way.
Absolutely. Basically, we're getting the feeling that Google doesn't care what everyone outside Gmail does.
Right. And I mean, it really is. We're talking about, five letters and a colon and two slashes. It's not, and it's something that your developers are going to need to do over and over and over again for all the other links in the documents that they're going to be publishing. So
we're going round and round in circles here. I'm pretty sure the product teams didn't know that relative links were possible. And I think if you try and put yourself in their shoes, not knowing that, it looked like a few extra characters could be assumed, because web browsers just assume it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to bounce it back to them, see what they think. I'm going to look at what information we have about how people have behaved.
Okay, that would be helpful. Okay, so that would be very helpful. We will get an email out to you to just make the argument for why it's really important to just have a URL for the context there. It really helps with interoperability. And then once we hear back from your product team, hopefully it will be resolved and we won't have to do anything. But if we do have to do something, it would be good to know the answer sooner than later, because we are trying to finalize JSON-LD and get it out there.
Not to beat a dead horse, but can you ask them to talk to their HTML people and say whether they want to take the http://// out of HTML and say it doesn't need it either? I think they'll get some pushback on that.
Are you talking about Higgsy? There's a lot of HTML people at Google. I think the biggest mistake anyone can make about Google is treating it as a monolith. It manages to act coherently, but there's so many different teams with different perspectives. And this product could so easily have launched with just a vanilla JSON. I'm very happy it launched with something that strongly approximates JSON-LD. Every little extra piece of boilerplate was evidence for people saying, look, we'll make up a JSON format, you can map it later.
Right. So I think you made a very good counter argument for doing that, because you would effectively end up with JSON-LD, and the only change we're talking about is adding HTTP to the front of the context. Like, that's it. And it sounds like the context document isn't really an issue. Right. All these things are in the name of interoperability. And really, these are the only two issues. Like, we're talking about adding HTTP:// to the front of one field and then publishing context document. And if those two things are done, then, you know, scheme.org and Google and everyone is completely in line with JSON-LD, and JSON-LD has this, you know, wonderful story where Google came in and adopted the technology and made the right decision when it comes to interoperability. And I think there's just a really good amount of PR around that. So I think we at this point we just need to understand what the scheme.org teams want to do across the various search engine companies, and once we find that out, we'll figure out what needs to change in the spec, or if anything needs to change in the spec. Bottom line, Dan, I think we're here to help you guys in whatever way that we can. So just please stay in contact with us, and let's figure out how to just work through these two issues. And I do think that they're fairly minor issues, or we should be able to address them fairly easily.
Just to stress, the fetchable content negotiable file, mm-hmm. that can't happen until I've done some other things that involve moving the site to new hosting. But I see no objection to it happening. The okay. detail of what's in that file, simply we can make it, the easier it will be for the four companies to agree, yep, that's a no-brainer. It's not too constraining.
And maybe this group can put forward the proposal that's just strings for everything and just say that's the starting point, and then we will refine the file over time. Does that seem like a reasonable approach?
I have to say that seems like a really bad... I don't know why we should do the thing. Right, if we know they're not a string, don't call it a string.
That was my point about being agnostic earlier. Can we just not say anything? Here's a context file.
Well, if you don't say anything, then it's interpreted as a string. That's if you don't say anything, then a string value is interpreted as a string. The only way to get around that is to say this in the context, interpret a string as being a URI, say, or a date, or that your best practices for publishers are to use expanded values to say this is an IRI, this is a date.
So when you're dealing with BNodes, that's not an issue because you just get a nested object.
Right.
When you're dealing with links, that's a
problem. Well, it's either a nested object, or it is what we used to call it a node reference, which is an object that has only an ID property, or it only has a value property and a type property, sort of language.
I feel like we're kind of going in the weeds here. Let's. I would much rather that we start with something that's easy, that everyone can at least at the high level agree on. I'd much rather that Gmail continues to use JSON-LD rather than us trying to make sure that every single type lines up. And because of that approach that the JSON-LD group is taking, Google or the scheme.org people feel like it's just overkill. It's too much.
Yeah. The perfect is the enemy of the good.
Right, exactly. And I feel like we're very close to doing that at this point. So I'd much rather get something, some base thing that we can all agree on, and then refine it from there. In the same way that the public vocabs mailing list has taken schema.org and refined it over time. I think that has been a recipe for success, and I think we would be smart to follow that same recipe with the JSON-LD stuff.
So I'm going to drop a quick note to the product guys.
Sure.
I'm going to be traveling a lot this week. I'll see many of you, I hope, at Semtech.
Mm-hmm. I think you'll see Greg.
I've asked Eric.
And then Sandra, maybe? All right, we're at the top of the hour. Dan, is there anything else that you need us to kind of discuss over the next couple of weeks related to schema.org and the JSON-LD usage?
I think we're good.
Okay, great. Thanks so much for joining us on the call, Dan. Appreciate it. And thanks, everyone, for the good discussion. We still have the lossless conversion issue that we'll discuss next week. Sandro, if you could be here again. I know that's more time away for you. But
I appreciate being at Semtech.
Oh,
I
right.
doubt I'll be able to.
I gotcha. Yeah. Well, then the week after that, then we'll schedule it for the week after that.
Sure. Okay.
Okay. Thanks, everyone, for the call. And we'll chat again next week. Thanks. Bye.
Thanks, guys.
Bye.
Thanks. Cheers.